Hey there, my name is Ricky Smith, and I'm the founder of Random Acts of Kindness Everywhere, a nonprofit that simply does exactly what it says, promote kindness everywhere. We know the world is crazy right now. If you are searching for a podcast that has a deeper conversation about race, my co-host Angel Gray and I will be discussing everything going on right now on our podcast, Random Acts of Podcast, on Blue Wire Podcast Network. To find out more, go to rakenow.org. Enjoy the show.
Blue Wire.
Cousins, Thielen, he's got it!
Garoppolo over the middle,
intercepted, Harrison Smith,
it's caught! It's Kyle Rudolph with a Viking touchdown!
Alright, welcome in everybody, welcome to Bleeding Purple, podcast about the Minnesota Vikings. I'm your host, Adam Patrick from thevikingage.com. We are part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, and we are brought to you by betonline.ag. As always, I'm joined by Eric Strack from minnesotasportsfan.com. And recently, Eric, Blue Wire just added Baron Davis to their podcast roster, and he's a former point guard in the NBA, and I just wanted to ask you, who's your all-time favorite point guard from the NBA?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm very passionate about this topic.
Oh boy.
And it's a difficult question to answer because I'm pulled in the same direction, but it's a bittersweet pull, and it's Stephon Marbury. So when Stephon Marbury was drafted and came up second rookie of the year behind Allen Iverson, I mean, he was the two players that I've fallen in love with other than Randy Moss are Chuck Knoblauch.
Chuck Knoblauch.
Yep. Remember, he won a World Series in 1991 with the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah.
And he was one of the brightest young stars in the game at that time. And Stephon Marbury, and both for the same reasons. I played middle infield. You know, I thought myself as a middle infielder when I was 5 years old, you know, thinking I was going to be playing in the major leagues. And Stephon Marbury, I was small, I was a point guard. I still wear the number 3 is still my favorite number because of Stephon Marbury. But then he demanded out of Minnesota and blew up the what looked like the brightest future in the NBA when it comes to, you know, what was it?
And was it there for 2 years?
What, early 2000s, end of the 90s, the Timberwolves were looking like the brightest franchise in the NBA, and then he blew it all into smithereens because he couldn't get paid as much as Kevin Garnett.
Yeah, how long was he in Minnesota? 2 years? Three?
2 years. I don't even think it was a full 2 years. I think it was his rookie year, and then like up until the trade deadline, his second year. Maybe it was 2 years, 2.5 years.
Just too cold for him.
Yeah, it was too cold. He didn't like the weather. He's admitted
but
that.
But he's from New York.
But, well, yeah, I know. The other part is that, like, and he said it too, like he said when KG was in Minnesota, he was like blind to what was going on, to like the rest of the NBA, how a real franchise was run, like how, like he was just naive, KG was. And and Marbury said that he saw it from the beginning that Timberwolves were just a bad franchise. So that was part of it.
That's cool.
But then, you know, you want to go to New York, which hasn't proven to
be
much
better. Yeah, where he went to the Nets, so, right?
Nets, and then he eventually got to the Knicks.
Suns, and Knicks. Yeah.
And then eventually off to China.
Yeah, and he got that tattoo on his head.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always enjoyed Marbury. We're around the same age, so I remember enjoying them because right around when I think his first season was when they switched their uniforms to the tree outline or whatever. And so I enjoyed those because I'm, you know, young and I'm like, oh, those are so cool.
Well, and we had them the only year that we were really, really good, 03, 04.
And then, yeah, and Marbury had like that, he had like a different haircut too. He had like a part in the middle.
Yes, he had the fade.
Right in a part.
But then he had the little line right in the front of the fade. And God, if I wouldn't have been a white, blue-eyed, blonde-haired kid, I can promise you I would have had that haircut. Even if I would have been white with brown hair, I probably would have found a way to get that haircut. I was just obsessed with that man. And then he left and broke my heart.
I was thinking about this question last night, and since we're around the same age, and I don't really watch the NBA anymore. Just, you know, busy covering football. But I would go with a former teammate of Randy Moss in high school, White Chocolate, Jason Williams. I mean, he's obviously not like a Hall of Fame point guard, but growing up, he was just so exciting to watch. Like,
arguably the most electric point guard.
Oh, for sure. Like, he was, I can't, like, if he was going to be like on TV or something, like the Kings or whatever, I would want to watch that just to see what he would do, because every game he would do something different. You know, he had the, like, in the All-Star game or whatever, the rookie game, he had the elbow pass or whatever, and just had crazy passes. Obviously, he wasn't the greatest player in the world, but he just did a lot of crazy things and things that not a lot of people did. So I've just always thought that was cool. And I don't understand why no one's like that really anymore. There's guys that have plays like that every now and then, but there's no one who does it like every game. I feel like, is there somebody like that? I don't think there is.
No, I mean, there have been players that you could compare, like, ball handling wise. You know, you've got the great point guards of the last decade. You've got the Jason Kidds, the Steve Nashes. I'm obviously missing a couple names. I mean, Stephon Curry has some Chauncey really good Billups. Handles and can dribble in space. Yes. No, as far as, I mean, you coming down the floor on a fast break with Jason Williams, you
don't know where the ball's going.
Because if you blinked, no matter where the ball was, what hand he was holding it in, whether he had to hit it with his elbow or his knee or his forehead or, you know, whatever he had to do to get you to look one way while he passed the other way was going to happen. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. He was one of the most electric point guards of all time. He was fun to watch. All
right, well, we'll get into some Vikings talk since this is a Vikings podcast, and we actually have some interesting news to talk about today. yesterday, Adam Schefter blew up Vikings Twitter when he tweeted that Pro Bowl running back Dalvin Cook will no longer participate in any team-related activities until and unless he receives a reasonable, keyword, reasonable deal, a source said Monday. The source said he's out. Without a reasonable extension, he will not be showing up for camp or beyond. What do you make of this? Are you freaking out that Dalvin might hold out, or are you one of those people who are like, the Vikings usually get things done right before training camp, so let's not freak out just yet until holdout actually happens?
Well, I am one of the few that has been saying this will happen the whole time. I'm not shocked at all. Zero surprise whatsoever. You and I have talked about this. I don't know if you were willing to go as far as a holdout like I was, but I mean, look, it's not just Dalvin Cook. Even if Dalvin Cook was willing to pay this money, even if he was going to back down in the end, I would be hard-pressed to believe that the Players Association wouldn't make him at least threaten a holdout. Because if he doesn't threaten a holdout, then who behind him is worth threatening a holdout? And that's what it is with running backs. Running backs, and I don't blame them. Running backs have a way shorter shelf life than almost any other position in the NFL. It's proven. Everybody sees it all the time. They're in their prime right when they come out of college, not 4 or 5 years after they've already been drafted. So it makes sense that when you're going into that last year, even if you're not a first-round pick and you don't have that extra year, it makes sense to demand a new contract because you could get hurt. But mostly, because you're in the prime, you're in your best years right now, and you should be getting paid for that, no matter what the CBA says. So I don't blame him at all. Will he actually hold out when it's all said and done? Well, I know we'll talk a little bit about whether he can even do it at all. I don't know, but it doesn't shock me at all that he's threatening it now.
Yeah, he can't really hold out for camp because of the new CBA. He has to report on day one, or else he, you know, risks losing an accrued season, which would make him a restricted free agent in 2021 and not unrestricted. So he could still negotiate with teams in 2021, but the Vikings would be able to match an offer, and whatever tender they assign him, you know, a team would have to give up a first or a second round pick to just assign him. So he's got to show up for day one. It's not the 30-day rule anymore with the CBA. I think Ezekiel Elliott had that. So he has to show up for day one. He's got to participate in it all because they can take it back if he just shows up for one day and then leaves. He can't show up on the last day.
But it's, I mean, think about it too. It's not that difficult, right? Like, you show up day one. My ankle's just bugging me a little bit today.
And then the
next day, my hammy is just a little bit sore. Like, if players really want to demand something, they have the ultimate say. Because, yes, that's exactly right. So, I mean, if Dalvin wants to hold out, he can hold out. Whether or not he actually gets to that point,
it's going to be a different form. Exactly. And then, but once he gets to the season, he can hold out for like 10 games. He's got to appear in at least six to get that accrued season, and become an unrestricted free agent in 2021. But holding out probably doesn't happen until the actual season, or else he just runs that risk of becoming a restricted free agent in 2021 and just losing a lot of any leverage he has right now. And I want to take this time to kind of debunk some of the rumors that are out there. I've seen a report, I think it was from Courtney Cronin, ESPN's Courtney Cronin, that Dalvin wants Christian McCaffrey money, and I can tell you with 100% certainty that that is completely false. He doesn't have the desire to be the highest paid running back in the league. He wants a reasonable deal. He just wants to be paid what he's worth. You know, that's probably in the range of maybe like David Johnson. I think he makes around $13 million a year. And then people are saying like the salary cap in 2021 could affect, you know, this deal. It could go down $40 million. I can tell you that the Vikings don't think that's going to happen. If anything, the salary cap is going to remain the same in 2021. So the salary cap is not an issue for extending Dalvin Cook. And then he has been made an offer. It was a super low ball offer from the Vikings, like less than $10 million fully guaranteed, which seems a bit of maybe like a slap in the face. And then the contract was set up for, so the first 3 years you get paid a little bit, and then the next couple years you can earn the majority of that contract, which I don't think any player would want to do. Most players want that money, you know, up front, and then you can have the big cap numbers at the end, but they want to see the majority of that money in the beginning of their contract, whether it's, you know, affecting the cap or not. So right now, you know, they're still negotiating. You know, I think something will probably get done, either before training camp or right at the start. So I'm not worried right now. The Vikings, they want to keep him. Rick Spielman said many times, raved about him, how he's, you know, one of their guys. They like to draft and develop guys. He falls in that category of those guys. And also the people who are like, oh, well, they've got Alexander Mattison and Mike Boone. They can just throw those guys in there. No, get out of here with that. I don't understand how you can even sit there and believe that for a second. You want to ask Mike Zimmer, who's currently in the last year of his deal, if he's like, oh yeah, yeah, we'll just go with Madison and Boone instead of Dalvin Cook. Yeah, we'll do that. I might get fired, but yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
No, that's not going to happen. And there will be a significant drop off if Dalvin Cook, you know, misses time. Just look at last year when he was out. Where was the rushing attack? It was non-existent.
Yeah, there's a great blog on MinnesotaSportsFan.com right now that was
shameless
put up
plug.
As a follow up to kind of the breaker of Dalvin, and one of our writers kind of. He admits when he started the blog, he would have traded Dalvin or gone in a different direction rather than Dalvin than pay him. But by the time he finished his blog, and he did quite a bit of research on it, and he puts in there running backs who are drafted in the first and second round compared to running backs who are drafted in later rounds, because everybody thinks that they're just interchangeable. And he proves in there that they're definitely not interchangeable. And if you're going to even try to get Dalvin Cook's what he's doing for the Vikings, you're going to have to go first round running back, which doesn't seem like a very good idea when you have Dalvin Cook. Why get rid of him and then waste a first round pick on him? It's the same thing that we talked about with Stephon Diggs. Why trade Stephon Diggs if then you're going to take and use a first round pick to replace him? And that's not saying anything against what they did with Justin Jefferson, because he was the best player on the board at that time. But if you're going to just look at and go, I need to replace my best wide receiver or my best player at a certain position, you got to think you're going to have to use a first or second round pick to do it. So that's always in the back of your mind when you're making those decisions. The put out for Dalvin Cook to Madison to somebody that you would get in the 2021 draft is completely different. Dalvin Cook is a transformational player. He makes your team from an average team into a Super Bowl caliber team. I mean, you can look at the Timberwolves. They are the Timberwolves. We were talking about them earlier. You can look at the Vikings. They're a perfect example of that, right? Like, without Dalvin Cook, where are the Vikings right now? Average
team,
maybe playoffs. Maybe playoffs because they're playing a questionable division, and we just added another playoff team to the playoffs.
They're a lower tier playoff team with Dalvin.
Absolutely,
they can be a contender.
Yep, with Dalvin, most people are picking them to win the North.
Right.
So I mean, that just shows how big of a difference it is. And I'm also interested to know, where did Courtney Cronin get that information? Because we are 97% sure, at least you're probably 99% sure, I'm 97% sure that she didn't get it from his agent.
Yeah.
So, and that's usually where reports come from. Right. So it could be from a Viking source. So I'm just kind of wondering, that seems odd that that from what we know, the Vikings lowballed him. Like, and then somebody gave Courtney Cronin information. Yeah, somebody gave Courtney Cronin information that Dalvin was asking for a ridiculous amount of money, which we don't believe he was asking for. So if anything, the only thing that makes me a little bit nervous about this is the conflicting reports that we're hearing. And from everything we know, and we're only getting one side of it, if you even want to call it a full side. Like, it's making the Vikings look shady in a situation where they should not be shady. This is the most important player on your offense. Like, this is not the time to, and he's a good dude who wants to play here. Like, this is not the time to start lowballing people and putting out rumors that they're asking for more money than what they are. So I don't want to jump to conclusions, because we don't know for sure. We have, you know, but it just seems like the Vikings are doing weird stuff with the beginning of these negotiations, quote unquote. Maybe they're pissed off that it got out that Dalvin is going to hold out. That could be it. So maybe that's where this whole thing goes.
It's also the NFL, and this is more the norm of going back and forth and putting, you know, out reports that so and so wants this and this team did this. So it's part of the negotiation process. So I'm not totally surprised of all this stuff coming out.
True.
But yeah, I'm not worried. I'm not at the point where I'm worried about something getting done. They've really built their whole offense around Dalvin Cook. And people are like, oh, the Vikings have all the leverage. They don't really. Like, each side has their own a portion of leverage because of what the Vikings have done and building their offense basically around Dalvin Cook. They trade away Stephon Diggs, so that was a big show, a big sign of their commitment to, you know, sticking to a run oriented offense or a more balanced offense. And they need Dalvin Cook to run that offense well. And I've seen people be like, oh, well, look at Gary Kubiak's offenses in the past. I could just plug and play anybody in there. Yeah, his offensive lines were also way better than what the Vikings have right now. And Dalvin Cook makes the Vikings offensive line look a lot better than they really are. So let's stop with that stuff too. And I just, I think a deal is going to get done. And I'm just going to sit back and watch all the people say, like, oh, they don't need him. They got Alexander Mattison.
Well, and leverage is such an interesting thing, right? Because, like, we just bought a house.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, leverage isn't always what the other party knows it is.
Right.
Right? Because Dalvin Cook might know in his mind he's playing football this year, no matter
what. He wants
what.
To, yeah. He
does, I'd
he
play for
he doesn't,
free.
He doesn't
want
to miss.
Like, he might
he
think that.
The time that he's going to miss right now, he doesn't want to. He's not that kind of guy. He doesn't want to miss it.
Correct. But let's just imagine, right? Let's just say hypothetically, Dalvin Cook would play for free.
Yeah.
He isn't going to tell the Vikings that. So they don't know what his leverage is. Because if he decides, I'm not playing in 2020, then guess who has the leverage? Yeah. Dalvin Cook, 100%.
Sure.
Because the Vikings, because of what you just said, Zimmer, Spielman being at the end of their contracts, they don't have a playoff team without Dalvin Cook. So if Dalvin Cook says, I'm not playing, Dalvin Cook has the leverage. If Dalvin Cook goes and tells them, I want to play for you guys, I don't care, I just love the Vikings organization, I will take a pay cut. Well, now the Vikings have the leverage. But that's not going to happen. So, like, I just, the whole conversation about which team has the leverage or who has the leverage, it's all dependent upon, A, how those people feel, which we don't really know how they personally feel, and then what the other person thinks they feel. That's leverage. It's all made up. It's all made up. Like, we literally don't know who has leverage because it depends on things that are impossible to know. And then knowing what the other person knows about you, which is also impossible to know. So it's just, we don't know what the leverage conversation is, but we know where it'll be if Dalvin Cook decides he's not going to play in 2020. And it's not going to be with the Vikings. So if you want to talk about who has leverage, it's technically Dalvin Cook when everything comes down to it. But it's always players.
Because
if the player decides they don't want to play, then they're going to have the leverage unless they're a player that nobody cares about. And then obviously, they'll go on playing the CFL or something.
And I think the last thing, a lot of people are comparing his holdout to, like, Melvin Gordon. And I'm like, no, Dalvin Cook is such a better player than Melvin Gordon. It's not even close. I think Melvin Gordon averages, for his career, he's averaged, like, around maybe just above 4 yards per touch, and Dalvin's been over 5 his entire career. It's silly.
Is the eye test
dead? Yeah, right?
Is
yeah,
the eye test dead? Does nobody watch Dalvin Cook play football? I'm serious. Like, watch Dalvin Cook play football, and then watch Melvin Gordon play football. Watch even Ezekiel Elliott play football. Like, Ezekiel Elliott is powerful, and he's shifty, but he isn't Dalvin Cook shifty. Like, I'm still convinced nobody else would have done what they did, what Dalvin Cook did to his knee that day, because nobody else can try and make the move that he tried to make that day. Like, you can see it. He tries to make a move where you go, don't try and do that. Like, your knee won't handle that. But Dalvin Cook, it does, because Dalvin Cook is different. He looks different. He slides different. He gets small into gaps. Probably better than any running back I've seen in a really long time. Like, the way he goes sideways and shifts right through gaps and
just goes.
The eye test. If you watch Dalvin Cook, especially in the Vikings offense where they use him in a million different ways, and then you can even talk blocking. Like, there's just there are a million different reasons why you would keep Dalvin Cook on this football team, especially if he's willing to take a reasonable deal, which is what Adam Schefter reported.
And wasn't Madison hurt last year? He played like 10% of the Vikings' offensive snaps, and he still ended up missing some games. So we're going to think that he's going to be durable enough to last the entire season as the Vikings' top running back. There's just...
And even if he is, I mean, remember how excited we were when we signed Latavius Murray? Like, we were jacked. I remember, like being up late at night, like, oh my gosh, are they going to sign him tonight? Like, oh yeah, like, it's that was Latavius Murray. Like, yes, I'm sure Alexander Mattison and Boone would be okay. They would run for an average amount of yards in a good system with a below-average offensive line. We would finish 8-8, somewhere around there, maybe sneak into that last playoff spot and then lose in the first round, and then we would go into the draft with running back as one of our needs.
Yeah, I just think people need to stop looking at Dalvin Cook as just like a normal, just a typical running back you can find anywhere, because he's not that, and he's proven that.
And Christian McCaffrey's deal has already proven that you can sign a running back to big money and still have a feasible out after year three. So the way Christian McCaffrey's deal is set up, $8 million in year one, right? If Dalvin's not looking Christian McCaffrey money, then maybe $6 million in year one. McCaffrey's goes up to $16 million in years three and four. But before year three, the Carolina can get out for a little over $8 million. So for half the cost, they can get out. If the Vikings can do that same structure, let's say $6 million year one, $8 million year two, and then $14 million in year three, but you can bring that cut number from $8 million down to like $5 million, I'm in right there. If I can cut them in year three for $5 million before I have to pay him $14 million, I'm in.
Yeah, and that,
I'm in. $6 million year one, $14 million year three and four, but I can get out in year three for $5 million, and I'm in.
So yeah, and I don't even think if Harrison, not Harrison, but if Anthony Harris is traded this offseason, this Dalvin Cook extension isn't even like a problem, I don't think. I think that...
I still don't think it's a problem. All my calculations, which
cap wise, I have a whole like, spreadsheet. It's just much easier to like everything else. People would be like, oh, they can afford it easily. Like, I mean, they can do that now too, but I think a lot more people would be more willing to be like, oh yeah, just pay him instead of being like, oh, Madison can replace him.
Yeah, but those options are still on the table. Yeah. Like, you can still trade Anthony Harris. You can still cut Riley Reiff.
Yeah, they got to...
Like, those options are still there if you really want to, but I don't even think you need to. You've got $10 million for next year, and really, we've talked about this. Beyond this year, like, the next year that's coming up right now, the cap is a myth. Like, it is a myth. Like, in the current year, it's a myth, kind of, but it totally becomes a myth after year one. Like, there's no point in looking at cap numbers beyond year one, because there's so many things that a team can do to manipulate that it is a myth beyond year one. So get him in for $6 million in year one and schedule it like McCaffrey's. I mean, $6 million for the best player on your offense. I mean, we're paying Cousins $30 million. Like,
Kyle Rudolph.
Dalvin Cook is the best player on our offense. Yeah, Kyle Rudolph makes this kind of money. Like, let's just stop with this conversation. It's absolutely ridiculous that we wouldn't pay Dalvin Cook. Like, let's stop with positions, right? Like, let's stop with positions. You are paying some of the players that you are paying the same amount of money that Dalvin Cook is asking for, especially in the first couple years of his deal, $6 million, $8 million a year, is nothing. And again, yes, the average salary will say about $12 million, but that's because it balloons in year three and four up to like $14 million, and that's where you get that average. But in years one and two, we're looking at $6, $8, $10 million at the most. Like, screw positions. There are just the amount of players in the NFL making that amount of money who mean nothing to their teams compared to what Dalvin Cook means to the Vikings. There's hundreds of them, maybe? At least 50?
There's a lot.
Like, there, I mean, there are 32 teams in the NFL, and plenty of players are getting paid $5 to $10 million.
All right, there's no shortage of action going on at our exclusive partner, BetOnline. NASCAR is back, and BetOnline has hundreds of other games, events, and sports to get in on. You can still bet on simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC events 24/7. Or you can participate in a $10,000 Madden Bracket Challenge, a March Madness-style NFL simulation tournament you can enter for free. And live right now on BetOnline's YouTube channel, you'll find an exclusive interview with ex-Chicago Bulls players Ron Harper, Horace Grant, Bill Cartwright, and Craig Hodges to discuss the Michael Jordan documentary on what they're calling the final dance. So visit betonline.ag and use the promo code BLUEWIRE, which is all one word, to receive your new welcome bonus and check out all the action. BetOnline, your online wagering solution.
All right, let's move on from this Dalvin Cook subject. We could talk about this for days. I want to get to interesting article exercise, I don't know, from ESPN, where they did a redraft of the entire NFL. Every NFL player was available to be selected. And I believe they had to, the requirements are, there's four picks, so one had to be a quarterback, one had to be a non-quarterback offensive player, and one had to be a defensive player, and the other one could just be whatever. What I want to talk about is that Kirk Cousins was the 24th quarterback picked in this redraft. So he was selected after guys like Drew Locke, Ryan Tannehill, Justin Herbert, Tua, Tagovailoa. I hope I said that right. Kyler Murray, like,
come on, you're supposed to be the one who knows everything on this show. If we take away your credibility, yeah, then we're really in trouble.
But, and I believe, not to make this a rip on Courtney Cronin show, but she was the one who was behind the Vikings picks. And I don't even care that she didn't pick Cousins, but she decided to go with Ryan Tannehill because she thought he was a top 15 quarterback last year when he started, I believe, 10 games. And he's never led a team to more than 8 wins in his entire career. He's older than Kirk Cousins, and she thinks he can recapture this success, you know, for the next 2 or 3 years.
She's got to get off of it. Macaroni.
So, I just, why does ESPN hate Kirk Cousins so much? Like, he's, but it, all the narratives, like, he can't win in primetime, he can't show up in the big games, he debunked those last year. He's one of the most, stat-wise, he's one of the most, you know, productive quarterbacks out there with Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes and all those guys. He ranks right up there in a number of important categories. What is the problem that ESPN has with Kirk Cousins? I just don't understand.
I don't know. I mean, when you started explaining, okay, so I could get it. If you are saying you're starting a franchise.
He didn't go until the third round of this draft, too, by the way. Not until the third round. I think pick 69. Hashtag nice.
Hashtag nice. Yeah, I'm trying to find excuses. Like, you know, like, oh, you're starting a franchise, so you wouldn't want to take a QB that's in the middle of his career. You'd want to take a younger one. But I can't really, you can't even say that, because if you are starting a franchise, you'd probably be better off having a quarterback who isn't like out of his prime, but has plenty of experience, so that he can lead the rest of your team. I don't really have any explanation for this whatsoever. It's stupid. Ryan Tannehill before Kirk Cousins. I mean, just the fact that Kirk Cousins plays every single game, every single year is enough and puts up his numbers. If you don't even watch him play, you would have to take him I mean, we did this exercise before the Vikings brought him here, and I would say, if anything, he's probably stayed the same. We had him as like the 15th best, the 15th quarterback we would take, like 14th, 15th in the NFL before he came here. I would say he's beaten out some of those people who are ahead of him when we made that list. But at the same time, we've had some really good young quarterbacks come into the league since we made that list. So I'd probably keep him right around the same spot. But quarterback is the most important position on the field. So even if he is in the middle of the quarterback tiers, he's not too old to be drafted. He has the stats. He isn't great. I mean, yeah, he should have. I haven't looked at this draft, but I would have a hard time keeping him out of the first round. But I mean, depending on how it went down, right? Because if with the 20th pick in the draft, you know, there's still,
I'll tell you some of the
Aaron Rodgers available or something, I'm still taking Aaron Rodgers. But I'll
tell you some of the quarterbacks who went ahead of him: Teddy Bridgewater, Jimmy Garoppolo, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold,
probably
Matthew
not.
Stafford.
Probably in the same area, because if you put him on a better team than the Lions, he might.
This
be
was,
a
I think, the point of this exercise or whatever was to try and build a team that would win the Super Bowl within the next 5 years. Drew Brees went pick 8.
And he couldn't even throw a football more than 20 years in last year's playoffs. 20 yards in last year's playoffs. So, like, that doesn't make any sense right there. That the Teddy Bridgewater, no, absolutely 14. Not. Tom Brady only... Yeah, I don't understand. You know, I wonder what's happening to some of these mainstream media writers and stuff with this quarantine, because they're really
people are talking about it. Okay, that's all they probably wanted. They don't care. I mean, we're writers. True. We know that we don't care if you click on an article because you hate us or not.
That's true.
Bad hate clicks are the same as regular clicks. So.
Yeah, but gosh,
but just credibility. Just
the Tannehill, especially Courtney Cronin, not having a good day on this episode of Bleeding Purple.
We're not trying to make this a tough
day
rip
for
on
Courtney
her
Cronin.
Episode. She still does.
Oh, I
good
love
reporting,
Courtney Cronin.
But
her nobody asked better questions in a press conference than Courtney Cronin.
What?
And
Chris Thomason? Come
watching
on.
Zimmer struggle to answer them is probably my favorite thing ever. Like, she, you can tell, like, some of the guys will ask questions, and then she asks this deep, thought-provoking question, and you can see him kind of look at her why? We were having such a good day until you asked me this really good, difficult question that I now have to think about. So I love Courtney Cronin. It's just, tough day for her.
Everyone has their bad days. moving on to another topic. We talked a little bit about Drew Brees last week with our guest, former Vikings receiver Matthew Hatchett. Go check that episode out if you haven't yet. It's a great interview.
Yes, he was so
Drew Brees last week. I think he was in some random, really random interview with Yahoo Finance. And he said that, like, he was asked about, you know, what he would think if players started to take knees again during the national anthem, and he said he'll never, you know, agree with someone disrespecting the flag, which is not what he was asked. And then he was greeted with a firestorm of replies from teammates, players around the league, lots of millions of other people who were like, why don't you understand, like, what they're actually kneeling for? Since then, he's come out with a Instagram apology where he posted a stock image that he could buy for $33 online. And then he posted another video to continue to express his remorse that he didn't understand. And the most surprising thing was when our president used Drew Brees and said he shouldn't have apologized or whatever, and Drew Brees actually replied to him and was like, no. This isn't why they're protesting. They're doing this. So, right. I respect him for that, but are we going to believe that Drew Brees in 4 days was able to finally understand why these players are kneeling and not during the 40 years he's been alive.
Yes. Look, this conversation is, you know, it's
slippery slope.
It is a very slippery slope. For me, so I grew up, my dad was a police officer, just
retired
right now. Yep. I went and my degree, my bachelor's degree, my 4 years bachelor's degree is in criminal justice. And I thought I was going to be a police officer for almost my whole life, pretty much until my junior year of college. I realized that I probably wasn't going to use that degree to be a police officer. So I see the police officer side of this from a different viewpoint as a lot of people, especially on Twitter, obviously. But at the same time, you know, I went to school. I've lived in multiple states now, big cities, small cities. I live in a suburb of Minneapolis now. I've worked, you know, I worked at Charter Business. I worked at Thomson Reuters, which is a massive company here in the Twin Cities. And actually, a media, Reuters is known all over the world for their media coverage. And I worked at Wells Fargo, and our biggest, we in Rochester.
One that got burned down?
And the bank that, the one that, well, actually, I'm not sure. But the one that I was at was 95% Somali customer base. So since getting out of my small town of Little Falls, I've seen a little bit of the world, and so has Drew Brees, though, too. So that's not really an excuse. But my thing with this whole conversation has been, and I've tweeted it out a couple of times, like, we would be surprised at how much people are willing to listen when, like, we're wanting to have a conversation with them. It's pretty clear that Drew Brees and his teammates, specifically his black teammates, who feel that black people have been oppressed around the country, around the world for far too long, have never had that conversation.
Yeah.
Drew Brees and Michael Thomas had never sat down and had a conversation about their upbringing, about what they saw differently when they were growing up. And that's what we need to remember. Like, everybody grows up in a different environment, and you literally, until you get out into the world and become an adult, like, you literally have no choice, for the most part, of what you're taught, of what you see, of what you're trained. And that's just life experience. And everybody has a different life experience, and your views on the world is shaped by what life experiences you have. So when Drew Brees is looking at the flag and standing for the national anthem, he's been taught his whole life that that is to honor troops. And when he was growing up, he sat on his grandpa's lap, and he told him about World War II and why you always stand for the flag no matter what, because hundreds of thousands of people died for your freedom, and that's why you stand and salute the flag when the national anthem sings. So that was drilled into Drew Brees from the time that he was a child. In the black community, they may have been told that same thing, but for years and years and years, many of them, especially in poor communities, feel like the laws and the country that those people fought to protect is not the great world of freedom that it was sold to be. And so they are using that to say, you guys might stand for the flag, and that's fine. We're not saying that you shouldn't believe that, but we're trying to show you that we grew up in a different America than what you did. And it isn't all about that. And sure, they fought for our freedoms and everything else, but we don't feel like we have the same freedoms that you had. And what happened with Drew Brees after he made his comments was he talked with all of his teammates that had bad reactions on social media and probably more. And they gave him personal experiences. They told him all of the things that have happened. And when you start hearing some of those stories, it becomes pretty apparent that you might that your mind needs to open up a little bit to what is happening around the world, right? What's happening around the country. And so, yes, I do believe in a very long, drawn-out way. I do believe that Drew Brees could learn in that four-day period after having conversations with all of his teammates what he didn't know when he made those comments with Yahoo Finance. And that's why I've been saying this about social media this whole time. No matter which side you're on, if you attack the other side, if you start the conversation with an attack, granted, Drew Brees is a huge public figure, so he's got pressure from all sides. So he folded under the pressure. Not that that's a bad thing. He should have talked to his teammates, and he should have had that conversation, but that's what forced it to happen. With normal people, once they log off of Twitter, they're not feeling that pressure anymore. So when you go at somebody on Twitter and say, you're a racist, and here's why, they already shut their phone off and logged off of Twitter before they read the here's why. Nobody wants to be called that. Nobody is listening to your conversation. And it's the same thing on the other side. You know, you hear white people say, you know, terms that offend black people, thugs, you know, hoods, like things like that. Like when you say those words, they're not listening anymore. And that is the problem. Until we all get together and are willing to have an honest conversation, that's what we talked about with Matt Hatchett last week. Unless we all get together and have honest, open conversations that aren't pointing fingers, this isn't going to get better. And that is where we're at. That's where I'm at right now with this whole thing. And sure, you might pressure top people into making decisions, but you're not changing the whole, like,
landscape.
The whole course of reality, the whole landscape of the world, because I'm telling you, people don't trust mainstream media. They don't trust social media. So just because on mainstream media, you're seeing everything change, you're seeing all of the sports shows talk about it, you're seeing all the news networks talk about it, you're seeing people say it feels like we're bringing actual change. I can promise you, all right, because I'm from there, that people in small town, Midwest, America, are not watching mainstream media. They are not looking at this and going, I feel like we need to make change. That is not happening right now. So we need to get together and have honest conversations, or it's never going to get fully fixed. And I think we eventually will. But
be a while.
When will politics not play such a big role? That's the biggest problem right now, is that politics plays such a big role and it divides people that you can't get together and have honest conversation without politics coming in the middle of everybody.
Well, first I want to say that was very well said. It's amazing what you can do when you have more than 280 characters to say something. You can get a full opinion across without someone jumping down your throat, and you're allowed to explain yourself. So...
I know.
But yeah, I guess I can agree that Drew Brees can change his mind in 4 days. I'm just one of the people who wants to see it continue. I want to see him take action, you know, whatever it be. I'm sure he'll donate something or whatever to some charity. And I'm not saying he needs to kneel or whatever during the anthem. He can do what he wants to do, but... I think if someone asks him later down the road, you know, would you ever kneel or anything? And he can be like, you know, personally, I would not do that, but I understand why my teammates would do that and what they're standing up for. So I still need to see that from him and see if it continues, because right now to me, it looks like a big, PR fest, where he's just trying to cover his ass because he just signed a contract with NBC Sports to replace Chris Collinsworth in the booth. Mm-hmm. So he's got to make sure that's still going to be there when he leaves the NFL. And the same thing with the NFL. They just put out an apology video or whatever from Roger Goodell. Why all of a sudden now? Because your players... like your star players put together a video that was calling you guys out pretty much. And now all of a sudden you guys are like, oh, whoops, sorry. We were wrong. So these apologies and stuff are fine. They please some of the people. Some of the people who are like, see, look, he apologized. Good. Whatever. But more has to be seen from these in order for them to be believable. Like, I feel like the NFL has good intentions. I think Roger Goodell has wanted to do more, and he's someone who maybe wanted someone like Colin Kaepernick to be in the league more than the owners that he works for, because that's the kind of conundrum he's in. He wants the league to be active and display their activism, but he also works for the owners, who are a bunch of rich white dudes who don't want, you know, anything to screw up with their money. So,
well, and the thing that we need to remember too, like, with all of these apologies and everything, there's really only three options you're, like, faced with this situation. You can apologize, you can Donald Trump it,
double
and
down.
You can double down, or you can just not say anything, and none of those options are going to bring good feedback. No. Like, if you apologize, you're going to have people saying, A, he's only apologizing because he has to, and then you're going to have other people who agreed with you who are now mad that you apologized, right? If you double down, then obviously they're going to be even more mad at you. And then if you just don't say anything, then they're going to be mad at you for staying silent and not apologizing. So, like, that's the one thing to remember. And I'm not just talking any, you know, racial thing. I mean, somebody could get busted for doing drugs in the middle of the season or something like that, and people will want them to apologize for it or not, or address it. And it's just like, the one thing to remember is, no matter what a player does or a person does to address it, a public figure to address something that the public feels like they've done wrong, it's always going to come with backlash. So they're staring at three options that aren't very, the only option is to not make the mistake the first time.
Well, and at this point, I don't think the NFL is going to have a whole lot of choices other than to, you know, be fine with their players protesting during the anthem, whether they like it or not, because I think there's just going to be so many.
Well, it's funny. Half of America burns because of riots, and now all of a sudden we're happy to have peaceful protesting.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, Colin Kaepernick taking a knee during the national anthem seems pretty minuscule now that they're burning down entire buildings and cities, right? So, like, these are things that we need to remember, not just now with, you know, white people remembering as they're getting mad at black people for kneeling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is something to remember, like, all the time.
Either
is that
this, or
if somebody is mad, right? If somebody's mad, it's
Burger
for
King's
a reason. What, like,
down.
What? Yeah, yes. What else? What could happen worse than this? Like, peaceful protesting is in the Constitution. If they feel like that kneeling is the protest that they want to do, as long as they're doing it peacefully, they literally have the right to do it. And I mean, if you want to say that a private company can tell them that they don't, I mean, you can argue that, and
there's just
you
too
might
many
have.
There's too many players for
you
might,
to
try and do
well,
that.
Well, and I don't even know, like, if you brought something like that to court,
that'd be a terrible look.
I mean, I don't even know if you would win, because it's a very public space. You know, it's a platform. It's not like a normal job. Like, there would be special considerations.
It's not like
into
a normal
that,
job.
So.
You mean, like, if you protested at your job, you know, you'd get fired. I've seen that so many times. If I did that at my job, I'd get fired. Well, guess what? You're not playing.
Well, we don't stand up at our desks and sing the national anthem at our jobs.
You're not getting paid
job,
millions
so.
Of dollars to play a game.
And you're not standing up at work and saluting the national anthem.
And you don't
anthem.
Have a reach. Your reach at your job,
like,
isn't
you,
to millions
could you imagine,
of people in the world.
Could you imagine if you did that? Like, I worked at Thomson Reuters,
doing?
Right? So, like, just down the hall, like an open hallway, there was, like, there's a full, like, they were contracted in, they were foreign, I believe they were a Somali community, most of them, and, like, what if they don't want to stand for the national anthem? Like, you don't know, like, there's nobody playing the national anthem in a corporate workspace where you're standing up at the beginning of every day and saluting the national anthem of the United States. Like, all like even that comparison itself is absolutely ludicrous, because we don't know what would happen in a regular workspace in that situation, because no workspaces do it. And I can promise you it would be an issue in some workspaces, because not every single workspace is white America. Yeah. Like, so there might be issues in other workspaces. We don't know that. So it's just like all of those arguments are just silly. And again, at the end of the day, if the NFL isn't going to fire them, right, if it is up to the NFL, then leave it up to the NFL. Like, don't tell them they can't do it. It is up to the NFL. If it is up to the NFL, let the NFL fire them then. But it's not your decision to decide what's okay peaceful protesting and what isn't. You're allowed to peaceful protest in the Constitution. That's it. There is no other. That's it. Period. Done. End of conversation. So, like,
I thought it was funny when we talked to Hatchett last week about how he said, you know, someone like Patrick Mahomes needs to take a knee. And then Mahomes is in that video where they called out the NFL. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, man, here we go. Like, if he takes a knee, what are they going to do? Fire him? Cut him? They're going to blackball Patrick Mahomes? I don't think so. He makes that league a lot of money.
And that's the thing. You're not going to do that for
Deshaun Watson?
A lot of the players.
Michael Thomas? You're not going to do that. Saquon Barkley? No. So...
yeah, and again, I'm not like...
that's the difference, though, between before this time and the first time, is that star players like are the ones leading the charge. Sure. And that makes a big difference. Like, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, it does.
Right. I had to agree with Aaron Rodgers in the past week. I did not want to do that.
I know. I know. And I'm like... so I'm... when it comes to blackballing Colin Kaepernick, like, for me, it really depends on what exactly blackballing is. If blackballing is teams not willing to bring a likely backup quarterback onto their roster who might have the ability to fight for a starting position, given the media like frenzy that would have followed him and all the questions that would have been asked, right? And granted, you can argue, and this is what a lot of people are arguing, those questions needed to be asked. They should have been willing to put themselves in a difficult situation so that those questions were asked. Sure, you can say that. But what I'm saying is I'm not under the belief that the NFL was looking at this and going, we're trying to continue racism in the United States by holding down Colin Kaepernick. Like, that's not what was happening. What was happening was we had a whole bunch of owners who didn't want to deal with all the questions. They didn't want to deal with the upheaval in the locker room. You would have had one faction in the locker room. You would have had people who agree with Colin Kaepernick, people who didn't. You would have had to have very difficult conversations inside of your locker room, let alone what would have been going on in the media outside the locker room. So it would have been a lot to bring in Colin Kaepernick. Should the NFL have dealt with that anyways? That's something that you can argue. But that's where I need to, like, sometimes I just go on Twitter to slow down some of these narratives that are just catching fire.
Yeah,
like,
they want.
Yeah.
There's a, I don't know if we, yeah, we talked about it with Hatchett too. Like, there was a former NFL executive who said, like, the Vikings should sign Colin Kaepernick because, you know, he would be able to, you know, help with rebuilding Minneapolis and stuff. And it's like, yes, he would be an upgrade over Sean Mannion, but they shouldn't. Right. It shouldn't be a charity to just sign a guy just out of pity and things like that. He's a football player too. He wants to play. You know, he wants to be an activist too, but he wants to play football too. He doesn't want to be given someone's pity and be like, oh, here's a job. Make sure you just do everything you do and make us look good. But I think there are, you spoke about like teams not want to deal with that stuff. I think there are teams around the NFL that are capable and have the locker rooms to deal with, you know, him getting all those questions. And you look at a team like the Seahawks and maybe the Ravens and the Steelers. Yep. The Steelers had Antonio Brown, so I think they're capable of dealing with just about anybody, you know, when it comes to getting press coverage.
And if Colin Kaepernick would have been a top 10 NFL quarterback, somebody would have dealt with him in their locker room.
That too.
But again, it comes down to he wasn't worth, and not because he was black, not because of what he was kneeling for. I was about to say what he was standing for, what he was kneeling for. Like, That was, they weren't looking at that and going, this man is evil and trying to turn people against our American flag. Like, that wasn't what the NFL was doing. No. It was to the NFL, even to teams like the Seahawks, even like we believe the Vikings have a really strong locker room. Like, even to teams that could handle it, it wasn't worth it for somebody who wasn't even a starting quarterback on a lot of rosters. Like, there are rosters like where he could have went and fought for a spot. But he wouldn't have been guaranteed.
You can just look at someone like Tebow. It's pretty much the same thing. Wherever he goes, he comes with a massive press presence.
But it's all positive. You're going to be on ESPN, and they're going to be sucking your you-know-what and talking about how much they love Tim Tebow.
Sometimes it's positive, but he gets.
It's always positive unless you were watching first
tape. Yes.
Then there would be some negativity. But, I mean, like, I just there the media presence that was coming around, like, it was, is Tim Tebow gonna be your quarterback or tight end?
Yeah.
Like, that's a different conversation than are you guys gonna have a conversation between your white athletes and your black athletes about what it's like to be a black person in America so that everybody understands why Colin Kaepernick is kneeling? Yeah. Answer that question. Like, that is a much more difficult question to answer from the media than is Tim Tebow gonna play tight end
All
or
right,
quarterback?
Fair enough. I think we had a productive discussion on this. We got our opinions across. I don't think we alienated anybody. I think we tried to explain.
I hope not. Sometimes I yell.
Both sides. No, you're very passionate, and everything you said was correct. So it wasn't like you're making up stuff like some people are doing these days.
Yes.
So I think that was good. We're gonna keep an eye on the Dalvin Cook situation. We both don't think it's gonna get out of hand right now. That could change within days, hours. But yeah. So this is the Bleeding Purple Podcast. We are a Minnesota Vikings podcast. If you want to follow us on Twitter, head to @BleedingPodcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeart Radio, the app. You can find us on there. We are on there now. So go check that out and leave us a rating and a review. Doesn't have to be good or bad, because we've had plenty of bad ratings and good ratings. We like to mix it up. So just tell us how you feel. But until next time, we will talk to you later.
Bye, fam.